Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Oh, I wanna be rich.
Greetings and salutations, everyone, from the Buckeye State. Yes, for this fabulous Saturday, September 19th, we are broadcasting live from Marion, Ohio at the 1959 class reunion. 50 years for these folks, and they are all excited to be hosting us and having us here in their town for the festivities. So we are so excited to be here and be a part of what the Marion Harding High School Class of 59 is doing. Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. My name is Heather Wagenhals, and I am your hostess with the Financial Mostess. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. This Saturday and every Saturday, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes, keyword, attitudes, for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And today, like every day, we are going to take you one step closer with all of the information and guests we have on our show. I'm so excited about this episode, one, because I'm traveling and having so much fun, and so I don't feel like I'm working, even though I am, because so many people are here, and they're so excited about the show. But this week's key is forget the perfection principle. How nice. Today's broadcast is all about forgiveness and getting back in the saddle. So we're going to talk about all kinds of things that will help move us forward when we've come so far. If you think about it, we're almost done. We have just two more keys left before we start over. So what we've done, if you think about it, if you take a look back and see how far we've come, for those of you who have been with us this entire season, and by the way, thank you all so much for keeping us at number one for so many weeks. It's been very exciting and quite a challenge because I thought it was tough getting there, but it's even tougher staying there. But we appreciate all of you listening who helped make that a difference for us. But if you look back at all of the keys that we've come through so far, first, we accepted where we are, whether or not we know about money, whether or not we're good at it or we messed up. We know that in order to get where we want to go, we need to figure out that we have to accept that wherever we are is where we are, so we have a starting point. Then we've taken and assessed our spending habits, not our, quote, budgets, unquote, but our spending habits. And we do that through our assessment key, which all of you learned about. Then we decided what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives. And so we dreamed, and then we attached deadlines to them to figure out what our goals were so we knew what we can do to accomplish them. And we planned backwards to achieve that. We identified that knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful, and so we said, let's work on our strengths and delegate our weaknesses. We did our hope for the best, plan for the worst, and while we don't want to be dwelling on negative things, we know that from time to time, events happen to us that we have no control over. And so while we fashion a great plan A, we want to make sure that we have plan B in place, and so we are insured by others until we can self-insure. And we learn how to plan for the worst, although we are hoping for the best. We've learned how to take emotion out of the picture. We've dissociated our feelings from our investment planning, whether that's pretending that we are somebody else giving somebody else advice, because you know you are really good at telling other people what to do. But when it comes to the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror, we kind of go, oops, maybe not so much. When we allow our emotions, because we're attached to the things that we like and the money that we make, that we don't make the most effective decisions. So we've taken emotion out of the picture. And we've learned to dissociate ourselves. Then we created, with our assessment phase, our time is due. So now we've taken and we break our budget. We assess our saving and spending style, and then we create a healthy savings and spending plan from that. Because budgeting and dieting go hand in hand, and those are things that you go on to and off of. And so when we go on to a diet and we restrict too many things, when we come off of it, we usually end up worse than what we were when we started, and budgeting is the same way. So we've created a healthy savings and spending plan, and then once we get started, we learn not to make excuses, so we don't have any seasonal exceptions either. And we learn how etiquette and grace and good manners will get us through even the toughest of financial times. Then, we're getting close to where we are, we remembered real estate as an investment vehicle where others can build our wealth. And then that takes us up to where we are right now, which is to forget the perfection principle. Because after all this hard work, what happens now? A catastrophic event happens to us. Death of an income-producing spouse. Something like a car accident or injury on the job keeps us from making money. Or maybe we just blew too much cash at the mall. Whatever it is that got us to break our good habits and interrupt our healthy savings and spending plan, what we need to do is let it go. And so today, our key, Forget the Perfection Principle, is going to talk about how to let go of the pain and emotion of making a mistake and how to get back in the saddle, get up on that horse, and start to ride again. And we'll talk about that in our second hour. And we have an incredible guest that's going to help us. Jim Villawalk, President and CEO of IEM Group, is going to call in and talk about how to get back up and get into the saddle with his experience in job hunting, and we'll talk about his book and what to do if you get whacked again. So it's all about success, as my husband says, is getting up one more time than you fall down, and we're going to have a great second hour. As always, we'll have our key in its entirety, Keys for Teens, with our segment host, Alyssa Wagenhals. And then we are also going to have the nuts and bolts on how you can implement this key in your life today. For this first hour, we're going to have Minutes on Your Money, and our Investor's Edge guest is going to call in. It's going to be Richard Barrington from MoneyRates.com, and he's going to talk about how to find the best mortgage rates and how to get into the real estate investment game, how saving and finding the right mortgage product will help get you where you want to go in your financial plan. As always, we will have our News by the Numbers with our segment host and show producer, Karen Germ. She's also editor of our fabulous weekly e-zine. For those of you who are not subscribers, how do you get the trivia question ahead of time? Simply by subscribing to the e-zine. It also talks about upcoming guests and all our tips, tricks, tools, and information to help you get on your path to financial independence. Simply, if you were listening from our show page, scroll down to the end of the show page and drop in your email address and hit the button Sign Me Up. That is not an option, if you were listening through iTunes or some other fabulous method of procuring our show, you can send us an email. Simply email ezine at unlockyourwealth.com and say, sign me up. So that'll be something fabulous for you all to get in your email box every week. And we are going to go over the trivia question in a bit, and you can win fabulous prizes if you happen to be the one with the right answer. But first, let's get into Minutes on Your Money. And will the web kill colleges? From Zephyr Teach Out and The Big Money, the cost pressures on many students and universities coupled with technological advances could relegate campuses and prepackaged education to the history books. Students starting out school this year may be part of the last generation for which going to college means packing up, getting a dorm room, and listening to tenured professors. Undergraduate education is on the verge of a radical reordering. Colleges, like newspapers, will be torn apart by new ways of sharing information enabled by the Internet. The business model that sustained private U.S. colleges simply can't survive. The real force for the change is the true market. Online classes are simply cheaper to produce. Colleges, community colleges, for-profit education entrepreneurs are already experimenting with dorm-free, commute-free options. Distance learning technology has just hit its stride after years of glitchy video conferences, and it's going to keep improving. Innovators have yet to tap the potential of the aggregator to change the way students earn a degree, much like the new businesses in 1999. And as major universities offer some core courses online, we will see a cultural shift toward acceptance of what is still in some circles a Phoenix U joke. It's hard to predict the precise pace of change, but it is possible that within 15 years, most college credits will come from classes taken online. Now, a model based on scarcity says that both newspapers and universities have traditionally relied on selling hard-to-come-by information. Newspapers touted advertising space next to breaking news, but now the advertisers have to find their customers on Craigslist and Cars.com. The main source of reporters' pay is vanishing. Colleges also sell information with a slightly different promise, degree programs that provide access to brilliant minds, training in the art of thinking, and ultimately better jobs. And as with newspapers, some of these features are now available elsewhere. You see publishers folding up newspapers all across the country. Now, separating class from college, you already see significant innovation in online education in some community colleges and for-profit institutions. The community colleges are working with limited resources to maximize their offerings through internet aggregation, and for-profit institutions appear to be capitalizing on the high demand for low-cost degrees and the fact that few public schools do much traditional marketing. Now, these entrepreneurs are a little like the early online news sharers. It's in a blend of blog and listserv members, profit seekers, and tinkerers, but just like the new model of news separated, quote, the article from the newspaper, the new model of college will also separate, quote, the class from the college. And already many degrees allow you for you to pay and take each credit as you take it. Classes can be done the same way online. So, of course, a cultural shift will be required before many employers greet online degrees without skepticism, and young students accept that college might mean staying at home with mom and dad, but all the elements are in place for that shift, so something to think about, definitely. Now, something else that I'd like to talk about in Minutes on Your Money is a cheapskate's guide to eating out. And this comes from Paul Michael at wisebread.com. And we haven't had a lot of great freebies and giveaways and coupons to talk about lately as summer has faded into the distance and fall is rapidly approaching. But here's something interesting. This comes from Paul Michael, and he says, when he was a young lad, eating out was something of a luxury for him and his family, but most of our meals, at least 95%, were prepared and eaten. But for most people, society has migrated to eating outside the home much more than inside. So how can you chop your bill and still eat out for less? Well, you can share your soft drink. Most of the time, Paul and his wife find that one drink is adequate for both. Now, I don't know about backwashing, so I can't say I support the soft drink idea, but plus, my husband and I, he drinks diet, and I drink the leaded kind. So that wouldn't work for us, but that might be for you. And it says, don't be shy, use coupons. For those of you that are a child product of the 80s, like myself, will remember the Sir Mix-a-Lot song where he says, she thought I spent bank, but I really spent coupons. Hand over the coupons in fast food places. They're all over the place, and there's also internet incentives for that. Be wary of the advice from your waiter. When you ask him what's good here, he just might be recognizing the highest priced item on the menu to tempt your taste buds, and but actually it's going to tug on your wallet at the same time. So maybe you should find a couple of inexpensive picks and then have him identify between the two what he likes best. You can also, because we are in the age of oversized portions, and I have never seen more of that as I have here in the Midwest this week, order appetizers as main courses. It's supposed to whet your appetite, but they come just as big as the regular meal. Split a meal. Sometimes my husband and I can get over on this one because we always like salads. We always split our entrees because some steaks come so huge. And, buying an extra plate that they charge you to split up a meal is cheaper than buying a whole second meal. And then that way you don't have to do doggy bags that stay in the fridge and get moldy. Because that's always what happens. I always forget to bring them in the morning. Take advantage of your birthday. You know, once a year, a lot of restaurants offer incentives when you come in on your birthday. So take advantage of that. Now, a salad bar can be your three-course meal. If you see how loaded they are, they usually have some sort of a dessert. So you can tempt your tummy with a salad bar, one price, and you can pork out on all the yummy things that you want and eat a whole entire meal in just one price. And there's the buffet, Mexican, Chinese, or traditional meat and potatoes grubbed. Buffets are a way to feed your whole family for about $20 or $30. And again, if you do order your own portion, take a doggy bag. That's always lunch the next day if you can remember to bring it. And look at gift certificates and other prepaid gift cards as incentives. Sometimes you can buy them for up to 50% off to be able to save some money there and still eat out and be like Sir Mix-a-Lot. She thought I spent bank, but I really spent coupons. So now we are up for our Investor's Edge segment, and I'm so excited to bring you Richard Barrington from MoneyRates.com. He is, I wish I was one of these, a CFA. He worked harder than I did to earn this, that's for sure. He's the primary spokesperson and personal finance expert for MoneyRates.com. He's a 20-year veteran of the financial industry. Having served over a dozen years as a member of the executive committee of Manning & Napier Advisors, he has earned his chartered financial analyst designation in 1991 with the Association for Investment Management and Research. And that's something that I always wanted to but never had an opportunity to pursue. He's written extensively on investment topics, including investments, money market accounts, CDs, personal finance as it relates to retirement. And he's been quoted by numerous media publications such as the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Pensions and Investments magazine. I'm so excited because in addition to all of this fabulous media appearances, he is also going to be a part of our show today. Richard, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I'm so excited that you took time out of your Saturday. Are you a Buckeye fan by chance?
No, I'm not. I'm in Western New York, so Ohio State's a little off the radar screen here.
It's funny here how everybody today, especially, they're out mowing their lawns in their Ohio State garb. It's red flags everywhere. Even the older set who are in canes have Ohio State canes. It's amazing. And I said, so what do you do? Do you joust when there's a Michiganite here with a Michigan cane? Because that's their biggest competition, their rival. So it's been interesting. I've never seen team spirit like I have here in Ohio. It's been kind of fun. So I'm so excited that you're a part of our broadcast because what we do here is teach people how to get on the road to wealth by having other people build it using real estate as an investment tool. And with today's economy, as it has set itself up to create the perfect conditions, I feel, for real estate investment. And one of the things that we do is we teach people how to go from renter to homeowner to real estate investor. And let's talk a little bit about what we do here, which is saving with a goal to buy a house, and how this is valuable because if anybody's seen, you know, Miracle, the movie Miracle on what is it, 34th Street?
Mm-hmm.
I almost said 37th. I'm a few blocks over. On 34th Street, we know that when we start saving, the way we earn interest is based on our deposits. So can we talk about some of the different deposit products that are out there and why saving with a goal to buy a house is so ripe for today?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, you know, when people want to buy a house, they sort of think of house hunting or maybe even shopping for a mortgage as the first step. But really saving up for your down payment is that critical first step. And I think it's more important than ever because, as you know, it's a lot tougher to get a mortgage today without a down payment than it was 5 years ago. In addition, having a significant down payment can help you get a lower mortgage rate. You're viewed as less of a risk because there's more equity in the house from the word go.
Skin in the game.
Skin in the game. Yeah, exactly. But from the standpoint of developing good saving habits, the other great thing about saving for a down payment is you can look at it as a dress rehearsal for meeting monthly mortgage payments. Setting aside that extra money every month for a down payment will help you find out whether the budget that you planned out in theory actually works in practice. And, you know, I think everybody's learned the lesson from the past few years that it's better to find that out before you commit to a house and a mortgage than afterwards. So, you know, a decent rule of thumb when you plan for a mortgage is that you should have room in your budget for 1.5 times the mortgage payment to cover all the incidentals that come with owning a house, like taxes, insurance, and the water heater that breaks down at the beginning of December. So when you first start saving for a down payment, a good way to do it is calculate 1.5 times your target mortgage payment. Subtract whatever you're paying for now in rent, because you won't need that when you own the house, and make sure you can put aside at least the remainder into savings every month. And that will both help you build your down payment and demonstrate that you really will be able to make those mortgage payments. Now, as people do that, for most people, the amount of money they're accumulating for a down payment is the largest amount of cash that they've saved up to this point of their lives. Now, as important as it is to save, it's also important to save smartly. And that's why it's a very important issue for people in that position to look at different bank options, and that's what MoneyRates.com is about. It basically brings together savings accounts, money market accounts, and deposit accounts, because we all know that bank rates are low these days, but the fact is you can double or even triple your interest rate just by finding the right product.
Yes, and a lot of people, you know, they get focused on the wrong things, like, oh, I need to go look for a house. And I'm like, no. First, we have to check our credit before someone else checks it and finds out that there might be inaccuracies that could give us a higher rate. But saving and making sure that we have an appropriate down payment is quintessential. And when we talk about what we talk about here on the show, you know, we've got people that are already in their first home and they're getting ready to make that next move to that investment property. And our down payment helps us to create a cash flow scenario based on what current rent rates are. And we may need to put more down because we have, you know, if we buy it as an investment property and we're not going to occupy it, we know that we need to put more down because there's what they call flight risk. So we have to mitigate that flight risk with our savings. Now, we know that putting money under our mattress is going to lose money every day because of the rate of inflation. What types of investment vehicles can people use if they know that they have 6 months to a year to save up for their home? What can they use to mitigate risk but help get them a little bit more money than they would have if they put it in a mattress or a traditional savings account?
Yeah, the important thing is to match the type of vehicle with what your time frame of the money happens to be. If you are, in fact, saving up incrementally, putting a little bit aside every week and every month, a savings account might actually be the best vehicle, simply because you don't have one lump sum to put, say, in a CD. Also, if you believe that interest rates right now are very low and they're likely to rise, then you might want to stay short-term, and again, that means more savings accounts and CDs.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you're starting out with a lump sum, okay, you've got a sizable amount, you know, $10,000, $20,000, and you know you're not going to need it for a year or two, then it's better to look at CDs, see if you can pick up some extra yield by locking in for that period of time. So it really is just a question of matching the time frame of when you'll need the money with the vehicle. Rule of thumb, obviously, is that the longer term you can afford to go, the higher yield you're likely to get. The one caveat right now that makes me hesitate a little bit is that I think that we might be at a little bit of an inflection point in terms of interest rates. And that would be the only thing that would give me pause about locking up for too long right now.
Well, what if I had, say, 5 years? What if, you know, I just maybe finished college, or I chose to go in a different path and work my way up into a company if I got a job right out of high school? So I just moved out from mama into an apartment or a home with my friends that I'm renting, and I think that I'd like to buy in about 5 years. What would my saving strategy be then?
Well, I think 5 years, you know, you're right on the cusp of being able to look at some longer-term investments, like treasury bonds that might get you a little extra yield. The problem is it's very expensive to buy treasury bonds unless you have a fairly sizable amount of money. And I'm talking like $100,000 here.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah, so that's not likely for college.
The transaction cost is going to be pretty pricey. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I think you definitely can feel confident locking in at a CD. Now, the question is, does that necessarily mean you're talking about a five-year CD? If you want to mitigate the risk that I talked about earlier of missing out on higher interest rates, if interest rates do indeed turn around from this point, you know, one thing you might do is ladder your CD materials, take that chunk of money, chop it up into a few different pieces, and say maybe buy a one-year, a two-year, a three-year, a four-year, and a five-year CD.
What are the shortest terms?
Oh, shortest terms, you can actually get a one-month CD.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but there's not, you know, I'm not sure I see a lot of advantage in an extremely short CD, at least the way interest rate structures are right now. I think you'll find that savings accounts are yielding pretty much the same as short-term CDs are, so why lock up the money?
Right. What about money market accounts? A lot of people, you know, hear about money market accounts, but they don't really understand what that is.
Money market accounts you can view as kind of a hybrid between a savings account and a checking account, although more on the savings account side. What I mean by that is most savings accounts have restrictions on how many transactions you can have in a given month. And if you exceed that, they're going to probably hit you with a pretty hefty charge. The idea is there that the bank wants to be able to invest that money with some confidence that it's not going to typically need it at a moment's notice. Okay.
Right.
So a money market account gives you a little bit more flexibility to come in and come out. In the kind of situation that you've described where you're talking about people with investment property, okay, a money market account might be a good option because on the one hand, it can be a vehicle where you drop a chunk of savings and let it earn interest. But you also know it has that accessibility to it if you find that as a real estate owner, you know, it is subject to unexpected expenses. And so if you want something that, if need be, you can draw on to make repairs or upgrades or what have you, money market fund might be a good sort of in-between solution.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, let's hold that thought for right now because we have to take a break and get our sponsors an opportunity to help support the show. You're listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio this Saturday, September 19th. We're broadcasting live from Marion, Ohio during the Warren G. Harding High School 50th reunion for the class of 1959. I'm Heather Wagenhals, your hostess with a financial mostess, and before the break, we were chatting with Richard Barrington from MoneyRates.com. Richard.
Yes.
So we were talking about money market accounts and other options as savings vehicles to create our down payments. Why is it so important right now to be thinking about shopping for a house and a mortgage? What makes this such an especially good time?
Well, and I'll underscore what you just said about it being an especially good time. I actually have been calling this the deal of the century. And what I mean by that is that buying a house right now can be less expensive than at any time so far this decade or so far in the 21st century. And as you know, that's pretty unusual. Real estate cost is not something that usually goes backward for very long. It has some ups and downs, but over time, it tends to just get more and more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had kind of an ideal combination of factors here. I think that, as a starting point, is the fact that mortgage rates are extraordinarily low. If you look back at the history, you'll find that mortgage rates essentially have never been as low as they've been this year. Okay, and so it's important if you're shopping for a mortgage not to get caught up in the week-to-week fluctuations. You know, they tick a little bit up one week and down the next week. But essentially, for the past couple months, 30-year mortgage rates have fluctuated between about 5% and 5.2%.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to this year, 30-year mortgage rates had never been lower than 5.2%. Okay, now you can do even better if you shop around, and that is one of the things that MoneyRates.com can help you with. It's important to remember that when lenders list on a site like MoneyRate.com, they know they're being listed competitively side by side with other lenders, and that gives them a strong incentive to put their best foot forward. But there are some other things you can do to get a better mortgage rate. You mentioned checking out your credit rating before you start shopping for a mortgage and fixing anything you can in your credit. Making a healthy down payment can help. So mortgage rates are very low right now, and you have an opportunity, if you play your cards right, to make them even lower. But besides that, another thing that's remarkable about this environment is the, $8,000 tax credit for first-time home buyers or people who have been out of the housing market for at least 3 years. Now, this is scheduled, as you know, to expire at the end of November. And although there's some debate now about extending it, I wouldn't count on it.
We can't afford it as a country.
Right, exactly. That, you hit the nail on the head. It's one of those things. It would be nice to do if we had unlimited money, but eventually somebody's going to notice that the government doesn't have any money,
Well, yeah, the UN wants to take us off of the standard and replace it with another currency. So I think that we're at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Where others have recognized that we've devalued our dollar, so.
So I would say that $8,000 tax credit probably has a limited shelf life. And look, why gamble when getting it now is a sure thing, right? So you'd really better get cracking right away if you want to close on a house by late November. So if you add those two factors together, the low mortgage rates and the housing credit, again, buying a house is actually more affordable than it was at the start of the decade, even though housing prices, despite the real estate crash, in aggregate are actually 40% higher than they were in January of 2000. But mortgage rates were higher then, and, of course, the $8,000 tax credit didn't exist back then. So, again, it's noteworthy because it is very rare that you have – a chance with real estate to turn back the clock almost 10 years and get in financially less expensively than it would have been 10 years ago. So, let me clarify this. You should not buy a house just because it's cheap, but if you've been thinking about buying a house and were a little scared off by the recent housing market, you need to get in the game now because, honestly, you might not see a better opportunity to do so in your lifetime.
I agree, and, I think that with the world, and I like listening to news from other countries when I listen to my national news, because regardless of them being a free country or not, you listen to their opinion, and I always say perception is reality, reality is not reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when I listen to the comments that foreigners are making about us, things are going to change. They're not going to be this good forever. What do you think are some of the conditions that are on the verge or are changing right now for us?
Sure. Well, besides the tax credit being about to expire, to pick up on your point about the dollar, okay, that is one of the reasons why I don't think people should get complacent about mortgage rates being this low. it's a, you know, because mortgage rates have never been this low before, you have to ask yourself, well, are they likely to revert more to their normal state, which would be, you know, typically they spend most of their time between 6 and 9% historically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several things suggest that interest rates might be about to tick up, including mortgage rates. Interest rates tend to be low in a recession, and we've just had the worst recession since the Great Depression. However, we appear to be coming out of it. And another thing which is also tied to the recession, the government has taken some extraordinary measures to keep interest rates low. But again, this costs money, and as we've been discussing, people are going to start to notice that our government doesn't actually have any money. So that intervention to keep mortgage rates low cannot last forever. Another factor is inflation. We had the most pronounced case of deflation recently since the early 1950s, and that also helps keep interest rates low. However, while the consumer price index over the past 12 months declined by 1.5%, I think the number was, that decline actually occurred in the last few months of 2008. So far in 2009, CPI is on track to run at about a positive 2.7% annual rate. That's more like a normal inflation rate, and with that, you'd expect to start to see more normal mortgage rates. Now, if you layer on top of that some of the things you're talking about the possibility of the dollar being devalued, that to us here at home is inflationary. And so if you actually saw inflation start to take off, you'd see mortgage rates really start to take off.
I remember as a child, my father left when my brother and I were real small. And during the 70s, you know, women have no clue what women went through in the 70s. It's fashionable now to be a single mother, to maybe have never even married the father of their child, and life is not any big deal. But when I was small, my mother could not get a mortgage unless a man co-signed for her. They still had gender discrimination back in the 70s. And I remember when Jimmy Carter was in office, you know, we had to go. My mom had to try to get refinanced, and the mortgage rates were astronomical, and my mother struggled. My brother and I had to, you know, I was delivering the paper. We had to do everything we could to make extra money just to help keep a roof over our head. And people, you know, it seems like it was a long time ago, but in the history of our country, it wasn't that long ago that we had double-digit inflation. And we had things that were runaway, mortgage rates, and it was hard to borrow money back then, and the cost of money was so much more expensive. And, you know, I just look at, you know, the arrogance of some of the younger people coming up and never knowing. You know, when I started in mortgages, a smoking deal on a 30-year fixed-rate loan was 9.5%, and you were glad to get that. And when people go, oh, my God, it's 6%, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, mortgage rates topped out at a little north of 18% in the early 80s. So it is exactly what you're talking about. And I got my first mortgage in 1986 or 7 at 8%, and I thought I was getting a fantastic deal. So, yeah, if anybody thinks that 5% mortgages are here to stay, they may be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, I'm concerned that they've stayed this long, but I think that if mortgage rates went up even 2 points, I think that would be good for America, because you've got people who are truly prepared and financially able and responsible to be able to make a mortgage payment at that price.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's part of what kind of crushed us, is because Clinton said everybody deserves to be a homeowner, and I said no, only those that are prepared and ready for the responsibility and are able to meet that obligation should be homeowners. And I think that flood to the marketplace stimulated our economy, and after 9/11 and we had the mortgage rates drop, it kept our economy going, and everybody kept cashing out and borrowing, you know, their profits. And they were, you know, I keep telling people, you can't rent your profits forever. And now the minute that the market turned and they owe more than their property's worth, they don't want to play the game anymore. And I said, well, you know, you chose that path.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to kind of own up to it. And those people are now out of the marketplace back renting again. So I think if rates went up just, you know, a couple of points, I still think that we would be okay.
Oh, I think so. But I think the takeaway here is, A, get started now, and B, fixed rate mortgage, not adjustable.
Exactly, exactly. Because I don't, they're not going to get any lower. There's still a cost to borrowing money that people don't understand. And you know, it costs to pay people to process the paperwork, to create the documents, to underwrite the loans, that you can't go lower than 4% or 5% on the wholesale part to the retail part, which is where the consumer actually pays for the home. And people just don't realize that it can't go to zero. That and we're at the threshold that we're at the floor, and it's only going to go up from here. And I think now people need to take advantage of it. I mean, who would have ever thought that you could buy an investment property at 6.5% with only 20% down? I mean, you can cash flow on anything today as an investor. And what people seem to miss is people were cash flowing when they had to pay 10.5% and 11% as an investor. So all is not lost if rates go up, but now people really need to make that move.
Yep.
When do you see things changing? What is your kind of prophecy for the future?
timing is always a very dicey thing, but I would say that you might get, as we move into the winter months, and there's not as much, you know, demand for real estate in a lot of parts of the country. You might see low interest rates hang in there a little while longer. But I'll tell you what concerns me is it really is the CPI issue, because I think you were right on the money when you talked about this is probably the as low as rates can get. Because if we get back to a normal inflation environment, which is 3-4%, okay. Well, the banks do have to make money on their loans, and at 5%, you know, that's just not enough of a margin over inflation. So again, we're already starting to see inflation kind of resume a more normal track. So I would say that you could be back into that more traditional 6-9% mortgage rate range. I would say 6-12 months out.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that you're probably on target there. Mm-hmm. I think that you're probably on target there. I mean, I remember in 2004 on my radio show, you know, we called what was going to happen. And I said 3-5 years, I said it'll probably start in 2007. And it was amazing to me because I was in Hong Kong at the time when the markets went nuts. And everybody was so shocked, and I was sitting there, and they're just like, why aren't you reacting? I'm like, because I told everybody this was going to happen. Nobody would listen to me, you know. And I think that we had a decade of where we just went nuts. You know, not quite a whole decade, but I think it started post 9/11, where rates went nuts, and only because of a scarcity and, you know, when value went nuts. And I think that people just, this attitude of arrogance really got the best of them. Now, I want to ask you this because I have a decided opinion on it. When people say, you know, when are we going to get back to normal? Where would you say normal is?
For mortgage rates?
For mortgage rates and the housing industry. Where would you say normal is?
Well, I would say normal would probably be around 7% for mortgage rates, for 30-year mortgage rates.
Yeah, and I always go back to pre-9/11 days, and they're like, oh, that's so far in the past. And I'm like, but you got to go where the market was before the chaos hit. And the chaos started with 9/11 and then continued with everybody borrowing money that they didn't have.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, we were in a recession even before 9/11. 9/11 occurred during a recession. And so, you know, the big problem has been, in part, is the incredible buildup of debt.
Yeah.
Debt.
The antithesis.
Over the past 10 or 15 years. And logically, with people, you know, having a lot of debt, logically interest rates should be high, not low, because it essentially creates more demand for for money. So, you know, we are in a little bit of an anomaly right now, brought on by the fact that this recession was so severe and the government has taken such extraordinary steps to intervene to keep interest rates low.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us – go ahead.
The one thing I want to say about your observation, too, about the post-9/11 is you're absolutely right, is that that's when the Fed started keeping interest rates unnaturally low. And the saying was that nobody wanted to be the guy who takes the punch bowl away from the party once the economy started to tick up. But really, there is a cost to keeping interest rates artificially low, and I think the housing bubble was part of that cost.
Agreed. Now, what I'd like to do, because so many people say, okay, great, now you've given me all these awesome ideas, how do I execute on them? And so tell us what Money Rates does, moneyrates.com does.
Absolutely. Money Rates is a consumer resource. What it does is bring together information on a number of different banking products, including a couple hundred different mortgage products. So you can look at it as kind of one-stop shopping, one site where you can compare rates from several different institutions rather than having to spend a lot of time on the telephone or going from one lender's site to another to another. Besides bringing those products and their rates together, we also do some basic vetting on those products, like making sure, for example, that lenders are licensed to sell mortgages in the states that they're listed under. And in addition to presenting mortgage products, MoneyRates.com also presents tools like various calculators and articles on a range of different topics. Like your organization, we're very concerned with helping people improve their financial literacy. We also have a blog which helps people stay up to date on what's going on in the banking business. And again, a neat thing is about Money Rates is that besides mortgages, it also has information on things like savings accounts and CDs. So for that first step of saving for your down payment, you can find information there. In all, Money Rates regularly surveys over 200 different deposit products and posts the results there on moneyrates.com. So you'll find deposit rate information. You'll find tips on saving money. So basically, from a potential home buyer's perspective, that means that moneyrates.com can help you with every step of the journey, from saving up for your down payment to finding a mortgage.
Well, that's so exciting. What one final thought would you like to leave for our listeners today about this whole process or taking advantage of the moment?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of people are scared off by the way that the housing market has been, but disruptions tend to create the best opportunities. And so if you are confident, the main thing is not focusing so much on, gee, do you think housing prices are going to go up or down from here. Focus on whether you can afford it. If you can afford it, why wouldn't you buy now? Because the risk is that you get into a situation 5 years from now and you're still in an apartment and now you can't afford to buy and you may never ever, you know, or it may be years before you get that opportunity again.
Agreed. Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your weekend, and I will let you go. So if college football is on your mind, like I know a lot of these Buckeyes are, you can get back to that. But we appreciate you joining us this weekend, and we look forward to surfing over to moneyrates.com. And for those who are driving around and don't have a pencil handy, you can always pick up our Investor's Edge guests on our website, and their links also will be up for the next week at www.unlockyourwealth.com. And guess what's coming up next? Yes, it is that favorite time of the show, our Millionaire Minute. This is the segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools that you can incorporate into your life right now today. And our Millionaire Minute this week is brought to us from Neil Patel, who he has an incredible blog, and he has 10 timeless business tips from 10 millionaires. Number one, there is no such thing as a safe bet. Just because a friend or family member tells you about an investment doesn't necessarily mean it's a good opportunity. If it is so good and possibly too good to be true, why would they share it, and potentially, why would they share it with you? Number two, you don't have to start a business to be successful. Neil recommends if you find a good business, you can buy it, grow it, and then sell it for a profit. Number three, just because you have money doesn't mean you should blow it. There's no need to waste money if you are a startup company. You want to be as frugal as you possibly can to make sure you have enough operating capital to ensure your company's success and longevity. Number four, if you want to keep making money, you have to spend some on yourself. It will create a drive to make more money if you spoil yourself a little along the way, but if you don't spend any money on yourself, what's the incentive to continue to make more money if you're already saving it already? Number five, have some cojones, some testicular fortitude, they refer to. Stand up for yourself and don't be afraid to confront people. Don't let others push you around. If it becomes a habit where people are walking all over you, it can be detrimental to your attitude and your business. Number six, raising venture capital is harder than being stricken by lightning. If you hire a venture capitalist, usually they have no clue what they're talking about other than they're trying to hawk your investment. But if you make the investor feel like they can contribute to your company, and if you can demonstrate growth, the investor might be on crack if he chooses not to help you. Next, number seven, there is nothing wrong with being last in the line. If you miss out on an opportunity, who cares? This is an attitude of abundance. There are plenty more out there. See who else is involved and think things through carefully before you jump in and make a commitment. Also, staying under the radar isn't always a bad thing. Number eight, getting press and buzz might be nice, but it can also cause your company to get too much attention and could lead to things like increased competition. He suggests stay under the radar to make millions while you can. Number nine, don't judge a book by its cover. Whether a Harvard MBA or a bum hits you up, take the time to listen and respond to everyone. This is my husband's philosophy. Don't judge anyone too quickly because you don't know who is going to be the next Bill Gates. Or as my husband says, who will invent the next hula hoop. And number 10, ride other people's coattails. Being successful isn't always easy, so why not increase your odds by following other successful people? You may not be as successful as them, but you will do well enough. And Mr., and it's some sort of name I cannot pronounce, invested early into a company that went public within a $30 billion, with a B, dollar market cap. So take these concepts now, fully and completely integrate these habits. See yourself in this way. Look forward to the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. Imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality. And that is your Millionaire Minute. Coming up, we've got news by the numbers. We've got all sorts of goodies in store for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Stay tuned for more right after this.
Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S industries.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twoforthroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagonhaws on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You're listening to Heather Wagonhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We're in the second half of our broadcast. This week's key is forget the perfection principle. No, money management is not mission impossible. You too can achieve financial independence right here each week, twice a week, listening to our broadcast. Now, for those of you who are just joining us, welcome to the broadcast. We're having a ball here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, and we have the fabulous, the effervescent, super popular, vivacious producer of this incredible broadcast, Karen Gurm. Are you there, Karen?
Hi, Heather.
I feel like this is appropriate for the place that I am. Here we go.
It's a need you gotta fail. It's news you gotta know. And news by the numbers is your favorite part of the show. Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Well, I hope everything's great back at home. It's chilly here. Everybody says I'm crazy saying that, but it is a touch chilly. What's the temperature there?
Hot and sunny as usual.
Well, it's sunny here, but it ain't so hot, so I'm a little chilled. Tell us what happened in the markets this week while I've been gone.
Well, Heather, this week, Charlie Blaine of MSN Money reports that stocks ended the week higher for the eighth time in the last 10 weeks, as investors have started to believe, rather than hope, that an economic recovery is coming. The Dow Jones Industrials closed up 36 points to 9,820 on Friday and are up more than 50% since bottoming on March 9th. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index was up 3 points to 1,068, and the NASDAQ Composite Index added 6 points up to 2,133. The close was the Dow's ninth gain in the last 11 days and left the Blue Chip Index about 180 points below the psychologically important 10,000 level. The index, however, is still down 31% from its October 2007 peak. A finish above 10,000 could send the entire stock market higher, experts say, but additional gains may be limited if the economic recovery is anemic for an extended period of time. For the week, the Dow was up 2.4%, with the S&P 500 up 2.6%, and the NASDAQ up 2.75% for the year. The blue chips are up 12%, the S&P 500 is up 18.5%, and the NASDAQ is up 35.5%. Crude oil fell 43 cents to $72.04 a barrel, but natural gas finished up 9.3%, continuing a huge rally that began on September 4th. Gas is up 39% since then. And that is your News by the Numbers. I'm Karen Gurm.
Outstanding. I have a question for you. I'm going to put you on the spot. If we were to make a bet, do you think that we'll break 10,000 by the end of the year?
Yes.
See, I'm not so sure. But we'll see. We'll see how consumer spending goes into the holiday season. But I don't think that we'll make it before Thanksgiving. But that's just me. But I'm going to be a contrarian this week. So, all right. So we have a wager.
Okay.
We're set for that. Thanks so much for the News by the Numbers this week. Today's trivia question. Last week, we talked about weird stimulus money spending. Now, for those of you that are just joining us for the first time, our trivia question is based on a previous show. And if you have not had a chance to listen to the previous broadcast, no problem. Because if you're a subscriber to the eZine, you'll get the question before today's broadcast, and you'll be able to download and listen and try to get the answer. So this week's trivia question is, we talked about weird ways that the stimulus money has been spent. All you have to do is name one unusual purchase to win. And we have coaching from the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, because everybody needs some support and accountability in establishing financial independence. We also have autographed books from previous guests, or you can also get 60 days of identity theft protection. This isn't just credit protection. This is full identity theft restoration, and you can win free 60 days of it, which also entitles you to a free credit report from all of your credit reporting agencies, as well as credit monitoring. And for those of you who aren't familiar, just surf over to our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com to find out more. If you'd like to answer the trivia question, you can do it in a few different ways. One, you can call in to win at 718-508-9002. 718-508-9002. Or if you are gun-shy and don't want to be up on the radio stage, you can join Karen in the chat room and chat over your answer, and you might be the next winner of one of our fabulous prizes. Moving on in this week's key segment in Forget the Perfection Principle, things happen to us, whether we do it to ourselves, like going to the mall and blowing a bunch of cash, or it happens to us. All of a sudden, we're responsible for the care of an indigent parent. Maybe one of our children is a special needs child and needs extra care, and we weren't prepared for those type of events. We have loss of an income-earning spouse. All sorts of things can knock us off our track. And what do? All hope is not lost. We do not have to give up. We don't have to give in, because financial independence isn't a race, folks. It's a journey. It's a process. And perfection should never be part of your goal. All we're looking for is progress on the process, a measurable difference, no matter how slight. That's all we're looking for. And so many times when we get caught up and we set up these systems and we get everything in place and we start moving through the system, you know, we have analyzed our savings and spending habits. We've created a healthy savings and spending plan. We did this fabulous goal setting for our future with Dreams with Deadlines. We've created our credit. We've gotten into real estate as an investment vehicle, and then wham, something happens. Whether we do it to ourselves or it happens to us, and we get discouraged. And then we start playing the blame game or abdication of responsibility and start pointing fingers, and then we're back to where we started. We just need to accept that we made a mistake, or we just need to accept that life deals us these things from time to time. And stuff happens. That's why we have our hope for the best plan for the worst key. The thing that we must remember when times become challenging for ourselves, like my husband always says, success is getting up one more time than you have been knocked down. And that's all you got to do. And if life was easy, it certainly wouldn't be worth it, because the values are what we measure the peaks against. And in order to know that it's good times, we have to have the valleys in order to determine that. And who better to help us talk about getting back in the saddle than Jim Vilewook? He is founder and CEO, or chief job doctor, as the term has been coined, of Job Doctors International, and president and CEO of IEMGroup.com. Jim thrives on innovation and results. You might call him an intrapreneur, an entrepreneur, and a jobpreneur, who is also the author of the book Whacked Again, which is a roadmap on how to get a job. His approach, experience, and work with executives and professionals in transition gives him the perspective of the hiring manager. He's created and implemented paradigm shifts within finance, sales channels, supply management, and global organizations, and founded 4 startup companies. Now Jim has applied his skills to develop a job roadmap that is endorsed by global organizations and senior executives. He's passionate about helping and teaching others, and he is here today to talk about getting back in the saddle when we have been whacked again. Jim, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, we're so excited to have you on. You probably see this all the time when you consult and people are whacked again, and they've worked so hard at their career. They've been deep in the trenches for years, and then all of a sudden they're obsolete. They've been downsized out, right-sized out, and upsized, sideways-sized, and they're frustrated, and they don't know what to do, and they're just exhausted. And the negativity and all of the stuff that comes with it, not just externally from spouses and family, but internally from our own inner curmudgeon who beats us up for making a mistake and blowing it or whatever happens. Tell us about the mindset that of these people as they come to you when you have to kind of help them get back on the path.
The biggest challenge that I find, and this is hundreds of people, is either they're just defeated. They've tried, and no responses occur. Or they feel cocky. They feel like they've been very successful and that they don't need any help. All they have to do is the same thing they've done for the past 20 years. And I have a message.
The Midas touch syndrome.
Well, they do, because they've all been successful. They've told me, Jim, I've had recruiters call me when I'm working. They offer me a next job, and my entire career has been that way. And so they think it's going to happen again.
And they'll do it bigger and better the next time.
That's right. More money, more bonuses, you know. But the challenge of both is that both, in my opinion, are wrong. First, the world has dramatically changed. And I think you cited it, talking about that some jobs are gone. Mm-hmm. other jobs will be gone or fewer of them. Now, Fortune magazine made the statement in March, which shook me. It said that one-third of Americans will be unemployed, underemployed, or just quit because they are defeated. And what I'm trying to share with people is there is a way, no matter what your background is, no matter what your failure has been in the past, to get back on the saddle and to be more successful in keeping in your career. I call it jobpreneurship. And the reason I do is because the average executive, finance, technology, HR, are in a job for 2 years or less.
Ooh.
And so they have to recognize that the world of their fathers and mothers has changed. Hmm. I was in a job for 20 years. I could have stayed there for my career probably. But I jumped because I was bored. And yet I've realized that the market has changed for everybody.
Yeah, my dad was after the gold watch.
That's right. And so part of the problem, and again, Fortune magazine put it very well, they call it just-in-time jobs.
Ooh, I like that.
So a company needs you today, they don't need you tomorrow. And in which case, you're removed, the next person comes on. And that has nothing to do with your ability. You may be the hardest working person, spending long hours, highly honest in what you're doing, and yet all of a sudden find yourself out on the street. And a lot of these factors are global. And the global factors would be outsourcing worldwide, but also more and more people competing, because I can now compete in India or China and other places on a virtual basis just as well as many people today are competing here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's also happening is older people who have retired have been hit by the economic crisis, and they're coming back to the marketplace. We have a new wave of younger people coming to the marketplace. And we have many people who, because of the economy, have been whacked and are now looking for a job. So the challenge is to stop looking at getting a job the way you used to and start looking at a job and having to get a job or develop your career the way that businesses go out and get customers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn how to sell and market yourself. You have to learn how to brand yourself. And you have to start off with knowing what is it you want to do.
Right.
And if you've been whacked in a career that's obsolete, that's a major challenge. But
yes, because now you might need re-education on top of just trying to figure out how to reinvent yourself. You might need to go out and acquire some additional skills.
True, but the biggest challenge I see two ends of the spectrum. One end, they go out just to get a job, and they jump from the frying pan into the fire. Less skill into a job, and they realize they hate the job.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of the coin are those people who think they're so good, they can do anything. And so they cast this huge net out, thinking that somebody out there is going to snap them up because they're just that good.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they're not specific in what they can do for someone, and so no one snaps them up. So in both cases, the first step you have to come to is to look at yourself and say, what is it that I really am passionate about? Want to get up in the morning, positive attitude, because I want to do this every day of my life. Now, 80% of Americans are reported to hate their jobs. So if you find... that bad.
Yep.
You look at lawyers and dentists. I mean, dentists have a high suicide rate. Lawyers are known to not love what they do in most cases. All you have to do is think about what are you doing and can you do something that you love? Because if you do, you're already ahead of 80% of your competition.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, we're talking about how are you going to compete in a highly competitive marketplace for your job, for your career, or if you're trying to get clients. Because as you cited earlier in a program, franchising or small business startups, at the end of the day, it's all about getting clients.
Mm-hmm.
And mom's suggesting to those who are trying to get a job is quit thinking yourself in a career. You're now a salesperson getting your next job, consulting engagement, or contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are doing contract jobs for longer than 2 years.
Yeah, they are. And that's
so,
kind of a growing segment of the marketplace because you're 1099, that creates a lot of opportunity for employers to not have to pay benefits and all that sort of stuff. That kind of gets off their plate where they get the work done, but they don't have to subsidize all of those other benefits for employees.
That's right. But what I'm suggesting from the employee side is whether you're a W-2, traditional employee, or a 1099, treat it like a contract job. Because in a contract job, what you're trying to do is find out how you can add value to that company, how you can meet more people to win the next job.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just-in-time jobs and the guy says, you know what, I don't need you doing this project anymore, but if you've networked around in that company, you now have other people who may want you to come into their department to do something different, but you've already made that connection.
Oh, I see. So instead of having, you know, like you said, both attitudes are wrong, the super arrogant and the other end of the spectrum, do you think that, like, not even going in that direction, but creating yourself as president of Me, Inc., like Brian Tracy always says, you're not Joe employee, you're president of Me, Inc., and figure out a totally different strategy?
That's right. And the strategy that I've documented is a roadmap for how do you do that. And it's the same roadmap that chief marketing officers and top salespeople look at and they say, you know what, that's it. But by the way, I haven't applied it to myself. So they run off and start doing that. But for most of us, finance, administration, operations, whatever the background is, we were never taught sales and marketing.
Yeah.
And so this is new for most people, but it will make them stand out above the crowd and get a job where others are still waiting in line.
So what do you think the first step is? I mean, because how do you overcome the emotion, whichever end of the spectrum you're in? You're overly, you know, sad because of what just happened, or you're overly arrogant. How do you step aside? What's that first step to help you step aside all of that emotional garbage and get started on the path?
Well, the one that's easiest, in my opinion, is a person who feels bad that they must have done something wrong. Because for them, it's simply sharing with them the facts I was citing earlier about how the world has changed. I can tell you, we used to be in a company where we whacked 100,000 people.
Ooh.
And that's where I came up with the word, because the executives, we would say whacked instead of other words just to emotionally remove ourselves from what we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as you look at productivity improvements, there's many issues that have nothing to do with the individual. They're just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And companies usually use what I call the broad sword. So they'll take out X percent of the department. And it could be based on tenure, just a lot of different ways of doing it. It has nothing to do usually with performance. And so if you're the one who's a victim of that, it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
You just were in the wrong place at the wrong time. So it's a wake-up call to realize that now's the time to learn a new skill set of how you can shake that off. And every time you go into a transition, you know exactly what to do. And by the way, you haven't stopped doing it. And that goes into the area of branding, because if you're branding yourself as You Inc., that is a lifetime event. So if I were to go in a networking meeting and say, hi, I'm Jim Vilwalk, I don't say I work for IBM.
Mm-hmm.
I say I'm Jim Vilwalk, and here's what I do. Because now they're going to realize what I do and the value that I can bring to somebody is Jim Vilwalk. They'll remember me. If I'm 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I go from job to job, it's different companies. I should be branding myself as me and what values I'm bringing to those who are looking for people to help them. When you do that, people start calling you to start introducing you to opportunities. It's kind of like the law of attraction.
Right.
But you have to know how to communicate that value as part of your brand. And so the process that I recommend very briefly is this. You start off with knowing what is it you really want to do, and it may be out of the box. I had one client who, in Vancouver, was a doctor of natural medicine. She wanted to become an actress and a dancer at age 30. We concluded that she should start working on that in the evenings, but in the daytime, sell her medicines and her abilities to the artist community. And so if she were to find herself really good in the evenings, she now has a network of people who can introduce her to get those opportunities. In the meantime, she's living, eating, and breathing with people in the community that she loves.
That's a great idea. So give us another example of how somebody can transition to the job of their dreams and do what they love when they're in the process of doing something that they really don't like.
Well, one example, you're going to find more and more people who, particularly in their 50s, if they have some money, are going to franchise or going to start their own business. They are to be very careful about looking at what they want to do. What I'm finding is many people who have been executives are now saying, you know what, I want to either have what's called halftime career and start to do things that help other people, whether it's with nonprofits or whether it's different types of mentoring or counseling. Others are going to say, you know what, I've always wanted to do art. So I have a friend of mine who is a director of marketing, and she has helped companies make a lot of money. But her heart is painting oils with portraits. And I said to her, look, go ahead and do that in the evenings. Try and get a showing if you can. But take those same skills and apply them to the area of marketing, because until you can make money, enough money, doing that as a full-time profession, you need to bring in money into the household. In her case, her husband wasn't bringing money in. And so that's what she did. And as of now, she's had two showings, and she sold pictures. So that is energizing her other side of marketing, and she's very creative. And so there's a very nice fit there. And at some point in time, she may continue doing what she's doing, i.e. both, or she may be able to be successful enough to go full-time and just to do the oil painting.
What would you say to people, because now we're having to make a complete paradigm shift from the traditional employee mentality, and we're having to put this, you know, President of Me, Inc. cap on. And I, you know, I've seen so many people, and I've had a couple people that have worked for me that get really enthusiastic about things, get behind ideas, can really create some momentum. But then when you ask them to do some specific task like selling or marketing, oh, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. How do you get people out of their own way in order to start showing them that, yes, you can sell and you must be a salesperson and a promoter of you, the most important person that you know? How do you get people out of that who don't want to sell themselves or are afraid of that? How do you help them make that shift?
It comes back to understanding the questions of how and why. And my experience is, and I'll use finance people because I'm very close to CFOs and finance people, they are the antithesis of a salesperson.
Yes.
And as a result of that, the effort is, first of all, for them to recognize that selling can be hucksterism, or it can be sharing something of value to the buyer, what they really want and need. And if you can offer what they really want and need, then all you're trying to do is let them know that you're the one who can provide that. And so all of a sudden, the negativity for them goes away. And then you have to start to educate them on what is going on behind the scenes. What is the psychology? What are people thinking? When you're networking, what really goes on in the executives' minds? And I keep talking executives. This applies to even college students.
Mm-hmm.
The same principles apply because human psychology are the same.
Yes.
And as a result of that, they first have to come back and know what is their product that they can sell. That's why the first principle is know who you are and what you want to do. And that is a process they need to go through. But once they have that done, they're now confident that they know exactly the niche that they want to go after, and they know the value they can bring to someone who wants to buy their services.
Great.
Once they do that, then they have to say, all right, how am I going to package that so that I can sell that, or all I tell them is communicate that. And so it starts off the same way marketing communication starts off, with a simple principle, which is called a tagline or a value proposition.
Mm-hmm.
So in my case, as an example, I call myself the job doctor. It's short. If you notice, it's just a couple of words. Hopefully it's memorable for those who need a job. Hopefully it has an emotional hook and connection, and they'll remember me. And it tells them what I do. It doesn't explain everything, but here's the key. A year from now, you won't remember anything I tell you. But if you remember I'm the job doctor, I've won.
Exactly. I did that in the 90s when everybody was selling mortgage rates. There's 1,000 lenders I was competing against, but there was only one mortgage goddess, and that was me.
Well, that's great. I had another guy who said, hey, I'm a spaceman. Now, think about that. My mind said, what, you're an astronaut?
That's what I'm thinking. Moon, astrologer.
Well, he was something. Well, I guess that's possible. But then he would pause, the pregnant pause, and say, I sell or provide commercial real estate to companies. I provide them space.
Nice.
And so the day I die, I'll still remember him as the spaceman. Now, this is hard to do. Companies spend a lot of money trying to come up with these. But if you think, once you know what you want to do, and you know the value you can bring to somebody, then you need to figure a way of saying it. And I tell people 5 words or less, 10 words or less is not good, but it's better than most people. Most people spend 15 minutes boring me to death. I'll remember zero of what they're saying because it's too detailed.
Exactly. As Shakespeare says, brevity is the soul of wit.
That's right. But the other side of that, which is why this is so important, is at the end of the day, it's all about developing relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to develop a conversation that has the mind share of both parties. That's the beginning of finding out about each other and asking questions of each other. And you do that, first of all, through having something that raises a question, and they want to know more. So what I do whenever I'm speaking with people is I usually don't talk about myself at first. I ask them about themselves. I'm learning about them. I'm learning what they're looking for and looking for areas that we have in common because relationships are built upon common interests. And ultimately, they'll come back and ask me, well, what do you do? Then I share. Very simply, if they're interested, they'll ask a question. Now their mind's engaged, and now I'm starting to get their mind share and their focus, and I layer my conversation so that I don't dump everything out. I may ask a question, or I may just share some concepts, or maybe an illustration, but I keep it dialogue. And if it's the first meeting, if all I do is get the fact that I'm a job doctor and we leave and they remember that, I've accomplished my goal. My second goal is go out there and make friends and find people with common interest, not selling myself. And that's the fear people have is, oh, I got to be a sales huckster. No, I'm not out there selling myself. I'm presenting my product. If you're not interested, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe you have a friend who's interested. If I come across as a good guy, a nice guy, and someone who's helping other people, paying it forward, then all of a sudden, trust starts to build up. And that leads to more and more people seeing that you're a quality person, someone you can trust, and here's the key. Now that we're willing to introduce you or refer you to someone else who trusts them.
And it just starts. I'm a big quality of a relationship person, like what you're talking about, versus quantity.
What happens in networking meetings, for example, and I see this all the time, is someone gets laid off or fired. They go there, they have the brand new stack of business cards, and they feel if they've given them all out, they've done their job.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's going to remember them. Those
right.
cards, for the most part, are being the trash. The key is business is done with people. And people do business with people they trust. So the question is how you develop those trusted relationships. It doesn't happen in one meeting.
Mm-hmm. No, it's something that has to be built up over time.
And built up over time with a number of people, because what happens is people are all networked. When you're not around, they'll ask other people about you.
Right.
So if it comes back that you're someone they can trust and you actually have done the things you said you've done, well, then you're viewed very popularly and very much as the person you say you are. Your credibility just skyrockets.
Oh, yeah. And it goes exponentially in the other direction, too. I mean, I've had people walk up to me and say, did that guy just give you a business card? And I would say, yeah. And they're like, can I see it? And you'd hand it to them, and they rip it up, and they're like, that guy has screwed over more people in this room than I would care to mention. And I'm like, whoa. So, I mean, that negative branding is almost even more powerful, in the sense that you got to really be careful about the message that you're putting out there, and you got to treat everybody with integrity. Because just like people refer people they like, they're quicker to share somebody they don't like.
That's why there's an old saying, the 100 attaboys disappear with one, I'll just say, mistake.
Agreed.
So it's real important. Now, here's a statistic that will blow your mind. And I got this from Crossroads Career. A person who's introduced to the hiring manager through a trusted relationship will have a 42 times higher chance of getting the job than someone else. That's a 4,200% higher probability of getting the job.
Wow.
So I don't know about you, but that tells me, man, that's the way I want to go.
Yeah.
Plus, 80% of jobs are through networking, and I'm going to add to that targeted networking, and 20% of jobs are through your job boards and recruiters. 80% of people are chasing after those 20% of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be 20% of the people chasing after 80% of the jobs and doing even better through trusted relationships.
Well, yeah, any referral in, there's a level of confidence and trust that's inferred with that relationship that's referring in. I remember I used to work with this sales trainer, and he used to always say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And when you kind of come in with that referral, there's somebody that has assessed your value and feels confident enough about it to refer you in. Because I won't just refer anybody, because I know that that's my reputation I'm staking as well. When I say, here, this person is a good guy, people are counting on my reputation and the trust that I have built with them.
Which is why if that person betrays you,
mm-hmm.
they're dead meat. And
Absolutely.
What happens, most communities are really small town mindset communities. Once you build a bad brand where people believe that you're not trustworthy, then what usually happens, the word does get around and people will smile at you, but nothing will happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming close to the time where we must say goodbye. So what one thing can you leave our listeners with that would help them get back in the saddle?
The one thing I would suggest for them to do is to start off by realizing that the problem is only them if they refuse to take a look at themselves and take the steps necessary to sell and market themselves and to compete in the marketplace, to learn the new skills. If they don't do that, then they will be viewed as a commodity, low-priced, easily gotten rid of. If they do that, they'll be viewed as a valued player where people will seek after and they'll be in demand. Higher salary, more opportunities.
Great. If people want to get a hold of your book or get a hold of you, where can people find you, Jim?
The easiest way right now is the website Whacked Again, whackedagain.com. And then in a month or so, I'll announce a new website, which is jobdoctorsinternational.com.
Ooh, I like that.
So either one. The Whacked Again is my book, but I have a new book coming out called Trusted Relationships. And so I'm using the new website for everything that I do. I do personal coaching, seminars, public speaking, and, of course, the books.
Great. Well, we're so grateful to have had you on the show. Thanks for taking time out of your Saturday to be a part of our broadcast. And for those of you who are listening but unable to write down Jim's website, never fear. Our Investor's Edge is here on our website. Find it at www.unlockyourwealth.com. That's www.unlockyourwealth.com. We will be right back with more Keys for Teens coming up right after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches right after this.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We are fully into our Forget the Perfection Principle broadcast. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time and are experiencing the keys, let me just share with you that the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that on a variety of different levels. And right now, we are going to welcome our segment host for Keys for Teens, Alyssa Wagenhals, who's going to talk to us about the teen perspective. Alyssa, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And how is college?
It's good. It's our first home game today, so everyone's really pumped around campus. It's great.
Oh, how exciting. What time's the game?
It's at 4, so in like a couple hours, yep.
Well, I'm glad that the broadcast worked out to our benefit that you don't have to miss the game.
Oh, yeah, of course, but I would have done it anyway, so.
Yay, we just would have had to listen to you over the cheering fans, that's all.
Yeah, of course. I like this key a lot because it takes the pressure off that I had been putting on myself up until this point. Forget the perfection principle allows me the room to feel okay if I make a mistake, because I know wealth building is not a race, it is a journey. From time to time, I may be tempted with all the things there is to do, and the fact that I am on my own and no longer have to ask my parents for permission to do things anymore. I know you are going to tell me this is not an excuse to go hog wild, and I won't. But if I do spend too much and go out of my healthy savings and spending plan guidelines, I know that it is not a death sentence, and I can make adjustments in some other areas until I get back on track. Am I getting this down pretty well?
You are golden. Next season, you're just going to fly through this stuff. That's pretty impressive. And you're right, because so many people get concerned, and I think that as people get older and they have less time to save and invest, that it does become a race for them. And, you know, life can be expensive at times and fairly costly when we least expect it. And we can get knocked off the path. And that's okay, because life is a journey. It's not about the destination or how fast we get there. We just adjust what we're doing to take into consideration what just happened to us and modify our plan so we can still get where we want to go. That's the beauty of planning in this fashion, because it's not about just making the timelines. Sure, in the third key, we talked about our dreams with deadlines, and we said, by this time in my life, I'm going to have X. I'm going to have this much money in the bank. I'm going to have this many real estate properties. I'm going to be doing these kinds of things, sailing the world and skydiving in every country, or bungee jumping or something crazy and off the wall, whatever floats our boat. And we put all of this into our dreams with deadlines. And then the deadline comes, and we haven't made it. And then all of a sudden, just like Jim Vilwack talked about, you've got two ends of the spectrum. And we want to be in the middle, not the swinging pendulum. We've got the neurotic people that said, oh, it's all my fault. I shouldn't have done this. And they get caught up in the stress and the anxiety of what's just happened. And they lose focus, and they forget to just start looking down the road again. Instead of looking down at their feet at what's just happened, they need to realign their focus and look back up into the distance at the horizon line where the skyline meets the road, and know that that's where we want to be. And focusing on what just happened right now isn't going to get us where we want to go. It's like in golf. Your ball goes where your eyes go. You know, so if you're looking off to the side or you're looking to the sand trap, guess what? That's where you're going to end up. All right? But if you're looking down the road, past the sand traps, past all of the bumps and the hills and the valleys, further down to where the landscape meets the skyline, that's where you want to be. And today is just one moment. And if you look behind yourself and you see how far you've come, that's the value in what you've accomplished, not the thing that took you off your mark today. And then you've got, from the people that are the neurotics, you got the people at the other end of the spectrum, the character disorders that are abdicating the responsibility and denying what's happening to us. And then we've got to start all over with acceptance and affirmation. We make mistakes. It's how we learn. Most of the time, our learning doesn't occur in our successes, but in our failures, because now we know where the boundaries are, where the fence line is. Well, oh, made a mistake there, won't do that again. And now you know to adjust your pattern. And that's what we have to do and apply to our financial life, is just know that things are going to happen, whether we do it to ourselves or it's done to us, circumstances beyond our control. It's okay. You just got to get back up into the saddle, dust ourselves off, and, you know, admit, wow, that was a doozy, or I can't believe I did that. Go ahead. Make the admission. Accept the responsibility, but don't dwell on it. You got to move on. This isn't about being perfect. This isn't about executing a plan to the letter. It's about the progress on the process. And just like Jim said earlier, you know, you can get 100 attaboys, And that one person that says something negative, bing, all of a sudden it's like all hope is lost. And it shouldn't be. And if you're just worried that you're not going to make it, look over your shoulder. Are you a few steps ahead of where you were? Are you one step ahead of where you were? Sometimes in life, we have to take a couple of steps back to take even more to go forward. And that's okay, because all we do is adjust our plan. And that's how perfect our upcoming key for review, revise, and recommit is. Because we are focusing on the progress of the process, not the perfection of the process. And that's what makes it so great. And you've worked so hard. For those of you who have been with us since the beginning of the season, you know how tough it's been to get here. This has not been an easy process. I have not been gentle with you folks. I've told you like it is, and I've given you some tough weekly homework assignments. This has not been an easy thing. This journey has been tough, but that's what makes it worth it. That's what makes it all worth it. We cannot measure our peaks without the valleys. And that's how we know how high we've gotten, because we see how low it was where we started or started over. And that's the value in this week's key, is to remember that we must focus on the progress of the process and forget that perfection principle entirely. So, for this week's key statement, for our nuts and bolts section, our key statement is, just like I fell a few times when learning how to walk, my financial life may take some stumbles too. What I learned now is that it is okay to fall, whether it's my fault or not. I must dust myself off and get back up and keep going. I must dust myself off and get back up and keep going. We can't focus on why something happened or how it happened. You just got to say, look, this took me off my path, but now that I know I'm off, I know what direction I need to go to get back on it. And you just got to get up and go again. And so what? It doesn't matter. Again, life is not a race. It's a journey. And you have to think about where I'm going and focus on the fact that you are capable and of getting there. You just got to be willing to get up one more time than you fell down to make it happen. And who cares if you don't make that personal goal? And maybe it was a five-year goal, and now it's got to be six. Big deal. It doesn't matter. The fact is that you're making progress toward it, and you need to commend yourself, because not many people do what you're doing right now, giving up a Saturday for 2 hours to listen how to make yourself better. Only 20% of the population take themselves seriously enough and know that they don't know everything and that they must learn from others in order to personally develop. And creating financial independence is probably the single most important task you could ever work on, to try to challenge yourself to increase your knowledge base. And by giving up your Saturday for 2 hours, or if you're a downloader and you listen to the broadcast later, 2 hours, that's an amazing commitment. And to punish yourself for making one mistake is ridiculous. Focus on the progress. Applaud yourself for the effort that you put into this, because you will be the one that triumphs. It's the person that stays in the game. That's the one that wins. Quitters never win, and winners never quit. I know it sounds like a trite expression, but it's so true. And that's the importance of our key statement this week. I must dust myself off and get back up and keep going. So this week's key affirmation is I am great at forgiving myself and moving forward. I am great at forgiving myself and moving forward. And we have two this week. And our second affirmation is I am able to respond well to whatever life throws at me. I am able to respond well to whatever life throws at me. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, we create these affirmations and we use these. We learn this in our very first key, acceptance and affirmation, to help empower ourselves and convince our inner curmudgeon that we are worthy of the goals that we're setting. And we do this several times throughout the day. The first time we say our affirmations is right before bed. We get out our sheet of affirmations and we read them aloud to ourselves or anyone else who cares to listen. And what this does is it focuses our brain. At the end of our day, we focus our brain before we enter into sleep, and it allows our subconscious to work on those affirmations, creating new neural pathways to help find the how to accomplish the why you are saying those affirmations. And then after sleeping all night and having 8 hours of our subconscious crank away at our affirmations, helping to realize them and make them true, then in the morning, first thing when we get up, we're going to refocus our conscious mind, and we are going to say these affirmations out loud again to empower us to focus on why we're going through the day and give us the strength to get through it. And then anytime throughout the day when we encounter negativity, whether it be from a colleague, a subordinate, a boss, a parent, a spouse, a child, a customer, a client, whoever, the competition, it doesn't matter. You do not want that negativity to dwell inside of you because it's like cancer. Once it gets in there, it just takes over. So we don't want to give that negativity a chance to plant its seed in our body. So after that negative interaction, we're going to run or walk carefully. And we are going to grab our affirmations. And again, we're going to say them aloud and refocus our brain on why we are doing what we do every day. To create the things in our lives that we desire most, a happy, healthy family, financial independence, that trip, our ability to ski all over the world, to be able to be the best ballroom dancer, whatever your goals are, create affirmations from them and use them. And then every week as you listen to this broadcast, you'll get new affirmations to add to your list. And as you knock off certain goals, you want to reinforce those as if they're still happening again, and use our affirmation system. So again, this week's affirmations, I am great at forgiving myself and moving forward, and I am able to respond well to whatever life throws at me. Now, our key action item for this week is a big one. If we're not currently in a blunder, a mistake, or a preponderance off of our savings and spending plan, then what we need to do is look back in the past and review the last time we made a mistake. We want to ask ourselves, did we punish ourselves? Did we just simply throw in the towel? And what you want to do is look at how you can handle that same situation differently without punishment, without feelings of despair, and think about what better choices you can make for the future if and when that situation happens again. So that's your key action item. If you're not currently dealing with an issue, go back to the last time you allowed yourself to get knocked off the path and take a look at it and see what you did wrong, what you did right, and create new alternatives. So the next time this happens, you have a better plan in place. I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. I want to thank our guests, Richard Barrington and Jim Villawalk, for all of their insight and information they brought to the broadcast. All of our segment hosts, and as always, the ever-popular Karen Gurm, for production of this show and bringing you all of the great things that she does to this broadcast and to the e-zine each and every week. I want to remind you we have yet another fabulous broadcast on tap. I will be back in studio for all of you. And we want you to answer the trivia question. If you didn't get it today, if you didn't have a chance to call in, please email us your answer at trivia@unlockyourwealth.com. For all you downloaders, we don't want you to lose an opportunity to participate. So please email us the answer for this week's trivia question, and you too can be among our illustrious winners. Thanks again for joining us, and go Buckeyes. I hope that today's game is fabulous. And to my favorite 59ers, thank you so much for including you in all of your festivities. I'm so grateful that my husband has you all as his close, dear friends, even after all of these years. Thanks so much, and we will see you Wednesday on the Midweek Update.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.